Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm your host, Jean Bolduc, and joining me today, oh, thank goodness, is Dolores Bailey, the Executive Director of Empowerment Incorporated. Welcome, Dolores.
Thank you, Jean, and thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to have you here. We've been talking about Happy New Year, everyone, for one thing.
Happy New Year.
This is our first program in the new year, first program being recorded in the new year. And I will say I had a lovely holiday. Quiet, relatively uneventful, no lights or sirens. You know, these things are important. And Dolores, you were telling me about your little adventure that you had during your holiday. And I insist that you share with everyone exactly what it is that you did that in 1 million years, Jean Bolduc is never going to be caught doing.
Well, Jean, my daughters and I drove down to Florida, Orlando.
I would have done that.
We visited a park called Gatorland.
Gatorland.
And in Gatorland are lots of alligators, as you might imagine, and crocodiles. But they also have one event that my daughters and I decided to take part in, and that was zip lining. So Dolores Bailey walked 77 steps up to probably 1,800 feet above the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
Tied on a harness and ziplined across.
Signed your last will and testament.
I did. And forgot one little piece, which I shared before, which was that I have a fear of heights. And so it was constantly, every time we went to a different tower and we challenged and championed four towers, it was a deep lesson in learning how to control myself. Talk to myself and encourage myself and call on the higher being in my life and ask for guidance and could this end quickly? Which it didn't. It was an hour and a half.
Really? From the time you left the first tower until you're back on the ground?
Yes. Yes. Oh, tower to tower and walking up, going higher each time.
And they just made it last longer, didn't they? They just said, well, let's just stop while we're climbing. We'll stop for a minute, look around, look down.
Talk
See,
about
I have
the park.
That, I have that heights thing myself, and I just couldn't do it.
Not a good idea, but done. I'm crossing it off my bucket list, and I feel good about that.
And you can't possibly look me in the eye and say that you're still afraid of heights, because I think you've gotten control over that fear, haven't you?
I know how to talk to myself now. I do not know, and I don't go up on heights, which is why I have forgotten. I do not go up in high places because I know that about myself, but I forgot.
So you've just naturally avoided this.
Yes.
As I do, too. And I mean, you know, this includes for me, do you know the movie High Anxiety? I'm sure you do, the Mel Brooks movie, where he comes out of the elevator in the hotel and he's like up against the wall because he forgot that when he pushed 9, that meant, you know, he was going to be 9 stories up or something. I mean, you know, for me, it's even that. I get that little loop-de-loo in the tummy.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
It's not like I'm going to, you know, drop to the ground and crawl on the ground. It's not that I'm not thinking about that. I'm just not going to do it, probably.
Well, I had that similar experience every time we went to a different tower of holding on to anything that I could hold on to until we got hooked up again
including
for the next
one
tower.
Including one of your kids by the neck, I'm thinking.
Exactly. Like,
how did you talk me into this?
Yes. Why did we do this?
Oh, yes. And I know, because I'm sure they'll be listening to this program wherever they are, I know that they were very proud of their mom for taking that on.
If they weren't, I am.
Even though you may have, you know, made all those interesting sounds not usually heard in nature during the experience.
Absolutely did.
And
absolutely.
Maybe had to take those pants and send them to the dry cleaners after, but that's okay.
They were dark, and I was very thankful that I had worn my dark pants.
I'm so glad I wore these brown pants. Oh, my goodness. Well, I just, you know, I bow before thee. I could not have done it. And since my kids might be listening, I'm not going to do it.
I did buy the T-shirt.
So it is the been there, done that.
Bought the T-shirt.
Got the T-shirt. Well, I think your kids should have bought you the T-shirt. I'll just say that much. But Gatorland, so I hadn't even thought about this. I'm guessing that as you're flying over, these are alligator enriched environments,
yes,
right?
Yes,
so
yes.
So you're highly motivated to get to the next tower.
Yes, I was. When I thought about Gatorland, I thought about walking through Gatorland, not ziplining through
Gatorland.
Yeah,
that's not very appealing either. If you think about it, it's Gatorland. That's a little, my goodness, you had a much more interesting holiday season than I did.
It was interesting.
And by the way, you're looking great, by the way.
No injuries at all. So I'm thankful.
I said no sling, no wrap around the head.
No alligator bites, none of that.
No bites, nothing. It's very impressive, and I have to say this is quite the surprise for this interview. Of all the things I imagine talking to Dolores Bailey about, avoiding alligators by way of flight was not going to be in it. And I assume that when you said you drove to Florida,
right.
It's hard for me to imagine that you didn't just fly and then jump out of a 707.
Again, my thought pattern, which was it would make more sense to drive down since there were three of us going instead of flying down.
Indeed.
And that we would make a memory.
Right.
And
right.
We did.
Right. And that you would sit in the back seat and say, y'all drive. I'm back here.
I was wrong with that one, too.
Yeah, right. Then all you have to do is, be in the back seat enjoying your kids driving, which, it always sounds like a good idea.
It really does.
I mean, your kids are grown up. How old? Can I embarrass you by asking you how old your kids
20
are?
20 and 30. Well, my niece who was with me is 30 years old, and
okay.
My daughter is 20. And so I thought they were going to drive.
Okay. And mine are 28 and 35,
okay.
And I'm still a little bit, I don't know. I mean, they're good drivers. They are. One of them, the younger one, is an Uber driver. Other people, strangers, put themselves in his hands in his part-time job. But I just, wow.
I'll just say when my youngest one drives, I close my eyes and try to go to sleep.
Well, I
try not to watch.
Well, I think, it's understandable if it's not, if it's not the most flattering thing. I'm trying to imagine my dad now would probably be in the back seat with me driving and be going, you should be signaling sooner, because he taught me how to drive when I was a teenager. And so I think it's like in the occipital when one of your parents is your driving instructor that you just have that you assume everything you're doing is being reviewed.
And it is.
And it is.
And it is. My 90-year-old
totally
mother will
is.
Sit in the background and in the back seat and go, you're going too fast.
You're going much too fast. You say, Mom, I'm in the driveway. I didn't start the car yet. I think that might be the meds. but
Absolutely.
Listen, that's how I feel. When my kids are driving, I feel like I'm going too fast. And I can look at the speedometer and know that that's not true. And it doesn't matter. It's really in your head.
Yeah, it is.
We're going too fast.
It is.
A bicycle shouldn't be going this fast. You're not telling me we're driving a car. You're just a little kid. Yeah. No, they're not. They're grown up.
I tell you, closing my eyes, similar to what I did on the zip line, is how I make it through.
It's how you make it through. That and a significant amount of tequila is what it would have taken for me to get on that zip line. That was not going to happen for little Jean Bean scaredy cat. Let's just put it that way.
I have no words of encouragement.
Listen, I go out on my back deck and I hang over the railing to look down on the ground and see if the cat is there. And that makes me a little jumpy.
Okay.
I just can't. I don't. And I never used to have. I never had this fear of heights until I had a baby. And after so Brian, this is completely on you. After I had my first child, this talk about things that are completely not related, but I painted my house. I painted the entire, Jean, a bucket, one brush.
Uh-huh.
Not one of those nice Wagner spray painting devices. No. And I had a Cape Cod house in Durham, and I had to go up and paint the dormer windows,
right.
Which is a little dicey. You have to kind of, get on the slope of the roof to get beside and all that stuff. And I don't know, I just, as I was doing it, developed a certain discomfort with that amount of height. And ever since then, I don't know. And I don't know if it has anything to do with becoming a parent. But I did notice that that's when it happened. I never had that before. Now, I can fly in a plane without any issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get a window seat every time. I enjoy the view from an airplane because I don't have that feeling like
you were going to fall.
I'm just going to dive right out the window. Although, I've seen enough James Bond movies to know that you could do that. Yeah. But I don't know. This therapy is very affordable. I really appreciate
Absolutely
it.
Great. I think my first experience with being afraid of heights was in the balcony of our high school. I went to Jordan High School in Durham. And it terrified me. The first time I went up it, that little jump that you feel in your stomach.
Yeah.
And from then on, that's many years ago.
So. Oh, well, it's more than five. We're not going to get into what's
only
many.
Seven. Only
it's
seven. Seven.
It's seven, seven years ago. That's great.
High school.
Well, you look great for someone in
Thank
their late
you.
20s.
Thank you so
I
much.
I won't ask you how you have a 30-year-old child in your late 20s. We'll get into that science program later on. In the meantime, you're listening, for reasons I cannot possibly explain, you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 WCHL, and we'll be right back. We're back, and Dolores Bailey is joining us now that we're off the zip line and talking about what is actually, I didn't even Google this, I just happened to know it, agoraphobia, I believe, which is a fear of heights. I think that's correct.
I won't challenge
someone,
you.
Someone from the psych department at UNC is on the hotline right now calling CHL saying, I can help these people.
Please.
Listen, you got your life's work ahead of you is all I'm going to say about that. But anyway, we were talking about my house that I was describing that identified for me that I have a not very happy relationship with heights. And we bought that. That was our first home that we bought in, oh, my goodness, 1979. And, you know, when I was four, aren't you impressed that I bought a house when I was only 4 years old? Yeah. Under an FHA financing program for first-time home buyers. So we had a graduated payment over 10 years. We didn't end up living in the house for 10 years, but the payment was, it was a fixed-rate mortgage, and the payments were graduated over a 10-year period so that you would increase your equity in the home and that the payments would increase as presumably your earning power.
Okay.
Would and it was a program at that time that was designed for first-time home buyers.
Do you remember the interest rate?
Yes.
Just out of curiosity.
Yes, I was just going to say the interest rate was 10%.
Wow.
And holy cow, were we lucky to get it because we moved in, I think, in April of that year, late April of that year. By the end of the year, the interest rates were well up into the teens.
Wow.
You know, people forget this, that in the late 70s and then the early part of the Reagan administration even, into 80, which is the end of Carter's administration, and into 81, interest rates were just ridiculous. They were up in the high teens. My husband's cousin bought a house in Connecticut around that same time, and I think that the rate, she said, oh, we were so lucky, we got 16 or 17%. You know, we got that rate, we locked that in before the rates got really high. That's pretty high for a mortgage.
And Jean, I'm shaking my head because that was the 80s. I started at Empowerment in 2002, and the interest rates were almost that high for first-time home buyers in Orange County,
yeah, I mean,
which
it's
is
just
ridiculous.
Really, really difficult to buy your first home.
Right.
And the one thing that you could say, on if you only looked at one tiny piece of the puzzle of housing affordability, is that the events of 2008 and 2009, the injury to our economy, did cause the bottom to fall out of the credit market and meant that rates, you know, went to next to nothing for a long period of time and had to remain very, very low to encourage people to come back into the housing market. But the buy-in to get into home ownership is very difficult.
And
we haven't
done it. I think that's really interesting that in 1996, when Empowerment started, it was because there was a need for people from low wealth communities to be able to afford to purchase homes, and there was no vehicle like that.
Right.
In 1996, the government started getting on board and allowing organizations, community development corporations like Empowerment to bring money and dollars to the table to help families, people who worked at the hospital. Self-help was big at that time. They were one of the entities that would also loan money to first-time home buyers. And so for a span of time, that was a great way to buy a home for the first time. If you fast forward again, like you say, to 2008, 2009, when the bottom fell out, for people who were in our programs, that they didn't get affected so much because of the way we trained them, because of the housing counseling that we did before, and also because of the understanding that we have with banks. So they were kind of protected. But now, in 2017, the difficulty is the banks have shied away from helping people who are in the low income categories, low wage categories, let's call it that way, so people can take their mind off of the stigma of who low income is. Low wage earners, which means they're out there working every single day, but they can't go to a bank and even get the 2 point or the 3 point, not two,
no, right.
the
I
three
mean,
or 4%.
Those loans are going to go For folks with, you know, high and steady, very steady, stable income.
So unfortunately, we're almost back where we started as far as who can own a home and who has not the right, but who gets to own their home and start that whole earning process. And, you know, the young people who are 20 and 30 years old who would be buying their homes for the first time.
Right.
And then the natural progress of I'm going to keep it for about 10 years. I'm going to sell it, go for something bigger as my family grows. That American dream, I do not believe exists anymore. It's not something that's easily attainable, but it's also an explanation of how and why empowerment is thriving in the affordable rental market now. And we can talk about that in a little bit.
Right, right. Well, I'm going to hold off rentals probably for our third segment, but I have to say, I mean, even programs from HUD, the Section 8 Home Ownership Program, I'm not remembering exactly when the home ownership segment of that began, but I bet you're right that it was around the mid-90s, probably under the Clinton administration that started being developed, that you could take your I think that's probably not a well-understood program because it's not people think of Section 8 as being what it is, which is usually rent subsidy. But you can, if your housing authority offers that program, you can take your subsidy and then apply it toward a mortgage and have it make mortgage payments.
There's an entire program, and I'm not an expert on it, but part of that is paying for a year and showing your ability to handle payments like that for an entire year, and then they help you switch over. Orange County just recently, and when I say recently, I would say within the last 4 or 5 years, got into that, that program. But it's a wonderful thing. But again, you got to
– But it's not everybody can qualify for it. It's not just a wide – you know, I'm on the Housing Authority Board, as you know, and – That program is I think, like the Family Self-Sufficiency Program, is probably one of the best-kept secrets in the federal government.
I agree.
And, you know, it shouldn't be. It is a secret that needs to get out. But the part of the reason that I think they can be so successful is that they are really quite strict about who qualifies for the program, and they are completely built for success.
And the interesting thing is
the homeowner gets a lot of support and direction in how to make that work.
And I believe the person that Section 8 voucher holder, and it's not called Section 8 anymore, it's called
Housing Choice Voucher Holders,
they learn that discipline.
Right.
And applying that money towards a mortgage payment, which is different from a person who, let's go back to 2005 when people were going straight from a renting situation to a mortgage.
Right.
And not really understanding all of the cost of owning a home.
Yeah.
Repairs, inspections, your own electric bill, all of those kinds of things. So it's a different kind of transition. This program, I believe, prepares people a little bit better.
Right. Yeah, which, you know, it's. That's just a great thing. I think it's always going to be a bit of a jolt when you find out how much is involved in owning a house. All you have to do is buy it, by the way, and something's going to fall off.
Yep.
I'm just telling you now.
Well, you
come in from the closing and you're so happy.
That's when you get the jolt, is that closing.
Right?
You're looking at
you
all
go to
numbers.
The closing, first of all, and there's a stack of paper that looks like the New York City phone book. And they say, well, practice your signature because we're going to need your autograph about 500 times.
Exactly.
And thankfully, you have a lawyer who's there to represent your interests who says, and you sign here and here. And this is what we talked about before.
Yeah.
And this is the part. And now it's going to show you what your payments are and so forth. And then they have a cardiologist there for that.
There's a shot.
But, you know, you come home from that knowing that you're a homeowner and therefore, at least for the moment, probably kind of broke.
Yeah.
And, you know, you close the front door and a fixture falls off the wall immediately.
Or light goes out.
Or a light goes out. Yeah, and you say, we paid the electric deposit, right?
Right.
Yeah, I thought you paid it. I thought, no, I didn't pay it. I was out ziplining. That's what Dolores said.
So, no, she didn't.
So we're going to come back and we're going to talk about rental assistance. And then we're also going to talk about some of the other great things that empowerment is involved in this community. And oh my goodness, get your wallet out because you need to give every cent you have to empowerment. This is all I'm going to tell you. I'm not biased. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler Zipline Edition here on 97.9 WCHL. We will be right back. We're back, and I'm joined, thank goodness, with joined by Dolores Bailey with Empowerment Incorporated. And well, you know, as we've been discussing zip lining and and affordable housing, an issue very dear to our hearts, both of our hearts. You know, we also we live in a political world too, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But let's talk for a minute about housing, about rental subsidies specifically, because I call it both things. I habitually call it the Housing Choice Voucher Program, also remembered well as Section 8. But the Housing Choice Voucher Program is a federal program that is run by HUD through local housing authorities, usually, even if that housing authority is part of a city government. There are different models that are used county to county. That is a well-known version of rental subsidy where the funding agency, in this case, let's say a housing authority, makes a partial or sometimes full payment of rent to a landlord to cover someone's rent because they are low income or at that time are even unemployed. A lot of people don't know that with Housing Choice Vouchers, if you lose your job, the program will shift the amount of rent that they cover to cover the entire rent so that you're not evicted while you're looking for a new job. And that's a great feature of the program. And then it's income based. So it's to keep your housing affordable, whatever your income level is.
So if you get an increase at your job, then the subsidy goes down.
Then the subsidy is reduced. That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. And they also have a program that's very similar, not identical, but very similar to the public housing program, the Family Self-Sufficiency Program, where you can attend classes and learn about to manage your money better, learn the value of monitoring and protecting your credit, which is extremely important in both in the rental market and in the home ownership market. Teaching people simple things like make sure you always pay your rent by the first, paying your rent on time and paying all of your bills, but specifically your rent and your utilities on time, can have an extremely important value in protecting your credit.
As a matter of fact, Jean, we empowerment.
And you all do that too,
we do. We have a housing counseling portion of our rental program.
Right.
Empowerment started doing home ownership, providing home ownership. And the saving grace for that, for empowerment and for community land trust, as well as Habitat for Humanity, is that we took all of our potential clients through an 8-hour counseling class. We talked about mortgages. We talked about inspections. We talked about home repairs. We talked about how to choose an attorney. All of those things, we prepared people before they purchased their home.
Right.
So that's not something everybody gets, though banks started to offer it. Very, very popular for us. Empowerment has probably educated close to 3,000 people towards home ownership. It is a tool that's very important to have, whether you're about to buy or not.
Right.
So as our program has shifted from home ownership to rental, we spend a lot of time counseling potential renters.
Right.
If you're switching from living with your mom and dad to renting your first apartment, you don't understand putting money aside. You don't understand electrical bills coming up. You also don't understand something that's very fundamental and painful for a lot of people. We only allow people to spend 30% of their income towards a monthly rental payment.
Right. And that's the federal guideline,
too.
That's what we say is affordability.
Right. That's affordable. When you're talking about rental, let's just go there. It is a hard pill to swallow. It is difficult for a person who lives on a fixed income, who only gets $700 a month, to figure out what 30% of that needs to go to rent.
Right.
That's not enough to rent an apartment here in Chapel Hill in all of Orange County.
Right.
So part of what Empowerment does is we handle the rental counseling, and it's hard for them to understand it, but we have to share that information with them.
Right.
I have a young man who works for the university. He makes $9 an hour. He cannot afford a $700 a month apartment. And he came to our office and we sat down and looked at the numbers and he cried. He said, I go to work every day and I can't afford to live here.
Right.
So then we go from that stage of, well, what about a part-time job? or he does not have a GED,
right.
What about, you know, let's get you over to the skills center
mm-hmm.
and see if we can't get that GED,
right.
which will up your income. There are all kinds of factors that are a part of affordable rental counseling.
Right.
And empowerment provides that.
And that's about getting him into good housing, but he's got to, you have to have these other things. And
absolutely.
We haven't, because we don't have time to, we haven't even talked about the fact that if he can't live in a relatively close distance to where he works, now you're talking about the cost of transportation
exactly.
being so much higher.
And he can't afford to live there. And again, yeah. that transportation then becomes his home.
Yeah. And that's
he's living yep. in his car.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, I believe, is a black eye to us.
Yes.
We have got to figure this
yes,
thing out.
I completely
Gene,
agree. I mean, it's bad for his employer, too. It means that you have an employee who's less reliable. It means all of these things. An employee who, by the way, is going to be sick more often.
Right.
And that's not good for the experience pool on your health insurance and your
Nor
employer-based health
Nor is it any good for
insurance.
His self-esteem.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
When he's out there working and he cannot make his ends
it's
meet.
It's kind of the ultimate lose-lose situation,
yes.
isn't it? So,
yes, yes.
So this is getting depressing. We can't send him zip
However,
lining.
However...
Yeah.
But, the good thing is, in his last moment of despair, he came to empowerment,
right.
and we were able to talk. And so we did help him fill out some applications and hook up his computer so that he
right.
could do that at home. So there's some good things. We empowered him that day.
And you all, this is what you do. You not only you look at the situation holistically.
Right.
So you also do provide some direct subsidy to renters. Is that correct?
So the way our subsidy works is Empowerment purchases rental units. They
okay.
could be older homes. They could be condos mm-hmm. that people are ready to get
right.
out of. For instance, in Carrboro, we have a significant concentration of rental units in Hillmont.
Mm-hmm.
Condos, which is on Fidelity Street. We have some at University Gardens. And then we have some individual homes that we own.
Right.
Some of those we purchased through taking out mortgages with banks like everybody else does.
Right.
Some of those are purchased with home dollars
mm-hmm.
and CDBG, Community Development Block Grant monies.
Right. And the home dollars, that's a federal program.
As is
right.
the CDBG program.
Right, right.
With those dollars, when we're able to purchase apartments with those dollars, we can put the subsidy directly into the price of the monthly
of the purchase,
rental.
Right.
That's
right.
correct.
So you basically use that subsidy to pay the rent.
To bring it yeah. down. So that person who has, so that young man
right.
that we were just talking about making $9 an hour, he then is now qualifiable for something that would have cost him $700. With that subsidy, maybe we can lower it to $400. Or
right.
500, and
right.
and then he's available, and is renting affordably as possible for him. But it takes those kinds of subsidies. That's how we use subsidy.
Right.
And Empowerment is one of the last landlords, commercial landlords, that accepts the Housing Choice Voucher. So not only are people trying to make enough money to just rent a unit, but sometimes even with their Housing Choice Voucher, that
right.
subsidy you talk about,
right.
landlords won't accept them. And so we had a huge rush of that in
2 years ago,
2013, 2014,
right?
Yes, where commercial landlords stopped accepting
you
them.
Know,
and so there we go again.
And you and I have little bald patches on our head from pulling our hair
exactly.
out at that time. I just, for the life of me, Dolores, I do not understand why landlords do not want to participate
let me
this
say this.
Program.
Let me say, I know the answer, and it's a color. It's
yeah.
green.
Yeah. Well,
it's
there's
green.
That. Yeah, there's that.
And in
it's
Chapel
true.
Hill, because and in our area that we live, there are other factors that are more important and can bring the dollars in.
Yeah.
And so I think landlords, it's undeniable that student population, that money that comes from the student population
mm-hmm.
is a lot easier to come by.
That's right.
You don't have to wait, which is what one of the complaints is with commercial landlords about their Housing Choice Voucher money, though it's not a wait. It comes every month. It's just easier money.
Yeah.
And so those of us who
and
provide—
more of it.
And more of
yes.
it, absolutely. So
yeah.
those of us that are providing for your housekeepers or your people that bag your groceries or your assistant teachers,
right.
it's harder for us to be able to accommodate them because it costs so much for us
and
to be able to accommodate.
All the wonderful people who work at UNC Hospital who take care of patients like yours truly.
Exactly.
Well, I was in the hospital last year. Last year, 2016, the year we're so happy to wave goodbye to. I had appendicitis, and I was in the hospital over Memorial Weekend. What a dandy time that was! Still have my appendix, by the way.
Yay!
And You know, it's always on my mind that a lot of the people who take very good care of you when you really need it, when you're in the hospital, are the very people who cannot afford to live in that community. And that just feels inherently wrong to me. I feel the same way about school teachers and people who work at every level in the school district, except the very, very top. Have really struggled to find affordable housing in this community.
I am wringing my hands because I have this to say. There are lots of people at the hospital that work at the hospital mm-hmm. and at the university who don't have any place to live, can't afford to live in this county.
Yeah.
But there's also the entity of the university and the hospital who I believe can do better than what we're doing for that.
I think there's plenty of room for growth.
There is lots of opportunity to collaborate mm-hmm. around finding affordable rental for the people who work mm-hmm. at the hospital and the university.
That's exactly right.
And you mentioning that you've been in the hospital, all anybody has to do is remember a time they were either at the hospital or walking on UNC's campus. The grounds that are clean, the floors that are clean, mm-hmm. the people who bring you your medicines, all you have to do is think about that.
That's
to
right.
realize those folk probably don't even live in Orange County, can't
That's
afford
right.
to live in Orange County. We need to do better than
and
that.
And you know me, I was interviewing every person who was waiting on me hand and foot, taking care of
Good
me in the hospital.
You. Good for you.
And I'm saying, you know, where do you live? Do you live in this county?
We have been to the bus
You're
stops.
You're asking me all kinds of personal questions about my bodily functions.
Let me ask you some things.
So I just wanted to ask you the following things, right?
I think we should spend some time at some point, Jean, and just sitting down and talking to people at the hospital and go, you know, where do you live and how do you, how many kids do you have and how is this working for you and how long have you been at the hospital?
And what could come to you that would really help? What would you need that would really help?
If there were a collaboration.
And not one of them is going to say, oh, I'd like to have a free ride where I have no responsibility.
Not one
is going to say that.
One.
Because that's not the characteristic of these people.
We are talking about people who are working
and
cannot afford to live here.
That's right. And for those people, this specific group that we're talking about, these are people who chose a career in which all they do is help other people who are vulnerable. And this is the important facet
exactly.
for me, is that no matter who you are, you can fall down the stairs and end up in the hospital.
Or your car could break down and couldn't bring you to work.
That's right.
And 2 or 3 days of missing work means you lose your job.
That's right. That's right. Oh, my goodness. We're so smart.
We're going to solve it.
We're going to take a zip line right to the solution for this whole problem. And we're going to come to that solution. Go ahead, believe that if you want. In just a moment when we come back, you're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler at 97.9 WCHL. We'll be right back. Coming right back to our parting shots, our closing zip line.
You've ridden that zip line, haven't you, Jean?
I think I have now ridden that down to the fourth tower, and now it's time for me to get back on the ground about the zip line. I'm just so impressed with that. I can't stand it, obviously.
Let's go do it. Let's go.
No, I'll tell you what. Here's an idea. Let's not.
Let's don't say we did.
Okay, that's what we did. Okay, that's how fast it happened. We just zipped right from one to the other. We must have done it because we seem to remember it.
That's true.
I feel like I did. Now I know what I'm going to have a dream about it tonight. I'm going to wake up screaming, and my husband's going to blame you. Okay.
I'll take that blame.
Okay. So Dolores Bailey of Empowerment Incorporated joining us for our final moments here. And what we're going to talk about, I want to talk about a couple of things that people don't necessarily think of right away with Empowerment. You told me earlier, which I knew that you were located at the Midway Center. I didn't realize Empowerment owns that.
Yes, owned and built. In 2002, Empowerment built the Midway Business Center. And let me just give you a little history of that spot.
Yeah.
It's called the Midway Business Center intentionally because that whole area used to be the Midway Cent area. African-American business owners owned that piece of lots of that area, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And it was called the Midway.
Okay.
When we built the Midway Business Center, we named it that, not after Empowerment, but to give homage back to all of the businesses and all the business owners that used to be in that area.
Okay.
So that's why it's called the Midway Business Center. It is the home of businesses that are growing. It's a small business incubator, the first small business incubator in Orange County. So
take
before
it.
All of
take
I
it.
Do take that. before all of the other ones came, empowerment was there. We were supported by the town of Chapel Hill. We were supported by Orange County. We were supported by HUD and USDA. We built that building. There are 10 spots in it for businesses to grow. Mm-hmm. They are anywhere from 200 to 800 square feet. Mm-hmm. The rents are low intentionally because we're trying to assist the business owners in growing.
Get on their feet.
We provide some technical assistance around growing their businesses. So this is somebody who has had their business in their home for years and decided, I would like a more professional place.
Right.
We provide them with some, as I mentioned before, some technical assistance. We connect them with the Small Business Center and help them write a business plan for their businesses. We also have faxing on site and copying on site so they don't have to go anywhere.
Right.
These are usually one- and two-man shops that are growing.
Right. Or women. One or two woman shops.
Owners. Men and women. And honestly, I think probably half of them are women, are owned by women, as a matter of fact.
Right,
this building was created so that those women and minorities who are traditionally turned down for loans and spaces and rental spaces like this, not just women and minorities, but usually that group of folk who are turned away because of how they look or because of what their plan is that doesn't fit into the corporate plan. That's what the Midway Business Center is all about. Again, to empower business owners.
Right.
So they come and they rent the spot out for 1 to 2 to 3 years, and then they move on. We do have a couple of anchor tenants, and we're just about helping people. So,
you know, this is just what you do, Doris Bailey. Every day, all day long, I was, you know, Doris was, I hope I'm not telling too much of a story, but Doris was a few minutes late in arriving at the studio today, and I was talking to Ron Stutz, and I said, well, I'm just waiting for Dolores to get here. And he said, oh, yeah, Dolores Bailey. And I said, yeah. And I said, you know, I know that if Dolores is not here exactly at the moment we had our appointment, I know that she's out there in the community somewhere with her bare hands holding up a roof for somebody's house or lifting somebody up. I know that's what she's doing. Let me just tell a story on you, and then we're going to bid farewell. But we went on this wonderful affordable housing bus tour at last fall.
Yes, we did.
And I sat with Bernadette Plessier in the front of the bus. Usually the problem children are in the back of a bus, but in this case it was us sitting right behind the driver. And let me tell you something. We went around and visited the many, many sites, some of which you probably drive by, folks, every day and don't realize that tucked in behind a building or in this way or that is a whole little affordable housing community. We had so much fun. It just was ridiculous.
We did.
And learned so much. And you do so much for this community. I have now done a one-hour program on WCHL with you, and I think we might have hit 10%. So I think maybe once a month we're going to have the Dolores Bailey, What You Thought You Didn't Know, on this program on WCHL. It's been such a joy to have you.
Now, let me say this for myself, because this is not about Dolores, and everybody knows it's not. I am a part of empowerment, I would say, just by the grace of God.
Yeah.
I have had the opportunity to take the things that I know and the people that I know and turn them around and hand it to a community that's so much in need. And what I want people to know and understand is there are those pockets of affordable housing communities who have such need.
Yeah.
And we take it for granted because we live in Chapel Hill and because we live in Orange County, one of the richest counties of the 100 that North Carolina has.
That's right.
But we are also one of the poorest counties. We are at 16.8% poverty level in Orange County.
We got work to do.
A lot of work. And there's so many things in between. There's those low-wage workers. There's those people that are living on other people's couches. There's so much in between. So I get up every morning excited. You talk about holding up roofs. It's not about that as much as it is helping that young man who makes $9 at the hospital and can't find a place to live.
Right.
Helping that young lady whose child, one of her children, got killed on Christmas Day through no fault of their own.
Right.
But being able to connect resources to someone like that.
Right.
And just helping a Hispanic woman who, the day after Trump won, walking to school with her child, gets badgered by a group of people in the back of a truck. That's what empowerment does.
Right.
That's why I wake up every morning. It has nothing at all to do with who Dolores Bailey is or that it's her. But there's so much need, Jean, in this community. And we only covered 10% because there's so much
there's
to talk
so
about.
There's so much. There is.
And if our conversation doesn't do anything else, I hope it sparks some other conversations with other people. And then we all come back to the table and fix some of this stuff.
Well, that's what we're going to end on, Dolores Bailey. And I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
what
you,
a joy.
Jean.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
Y'all have a great week, and we'll see you next weekend here in the Water Cooler.